mine and yours. And you don't want no pressure, what but a backup and withdrawal. Cause trust me when I tell you, you don't want that you can crawl. And you don't want to see inside of my...
Chapter 53. Walk. Look. Keep your eyes open. What the heck does a volcano spirit even look like? It was an effort just to look. The air was clammy on Zuko's skin, mist and shadows everywhere, which made no sense. Asagi Tatsu was a dragon's name. Where was the sun? Walk. Look. This isn't safe for any of us. Wouldn't be, even if the face dealer wasn't planning something. Zuko stepped as quietly as he could on the black sand of the boundary's shore, trying not to stir the spirit mists too much. Helped that he wasn't in armor, or the sandals he'd climbed in this morning. Instead, he was in the blue spirit soft boots, dressed in near black from head to toe, and he just knew this outfit was going to be trouble. Behind him, Shiron ghosted over wet sand in earth shoes, Dai Li uniform as oddly dark as Zuko's own outfit. The rim of his hat burned with faint blue foxfire, and the man was obviously holding onto his nerves with both hands. A head mist eddied around the only one of them who looked halfway comfortable here. Lang Shui's past lives were a dim blue-gold haze around him, yet the Kyoshi robes he wore were just as inexplicably midnight dark as theirs. "This way," the waterbender murmured. Zuko scowled. "How do you know?" His voice didn't sound right. He hated that. "We're walking down a shoreline. We can't..." "Don't say can't." But Long Shui sounded as much amused as forbidding. "This isn't the living world. Anywhere can be anywhere. The shore will take us to Asagi Tatsu, because we need it to, and because we are Yauren." Zuko's scowl deepened. "Bending two elements doesn't mean much where you can't bend." "You don't believe in much, do you?" Long Shui looked out into the misty dark, where the shush of waves lapped the shore. "She's out there." "So's a lot of other stuff we don't want to see," Zuko muttered. "Just wait. Next thing you know, we'll be climbing the southern mountains in a thunderstorm."
"Somehow that wouldn't surprise me,"
Shirong said just as low. Zuko glanced at him. "Are you all right?"
"I want my chains." Shirong patted his sleeves absently. "I want them quite a bit, and I don't seem to have them. And we're somewhere none of us can bend. There's a certain degree of comfort in knowing you can slam a rock wall between you and the Kamui trying to eat your face. I miss it."
"Hit them with your hat," Zuko suggested.
"Your sense of humor knows no lower bounds," Shirong said dryly.
"I'm serious. It looks like Azula's fire is still on it." Oh, he could have kicked himself. Naming names was always a bad idea around spirits. Naming Azula when they weren't trying to find her? Long Shui halted with a strangled curse. As mist glittered with foxfire, the wind shifted, bringing a scent of brimstone. "Damn it, I knew this was going to be bad. Why didn't Long Shui give us any details?" "Wait, a threat from the shore? When the spirit world itself was supposed to be across the water?" "Ko and Makoto are deceivers." His Tao sang free, and waves crashed down.
"You're fretting."
Caught staring up the side of the caldera Zuko and his companions had ventured up, Iroh turned back to Amaya with a bemused smile.
"A privilege of the aged."
"Oh?" She waved a hand at the rough settlement being carved above the marks of storm surge, and gave him a look full of mischief.
"Strange.
I haven't met that many aged men who could press enough weight to startle earthbenders. The waterbender chuckled. Everyone has to help with unloading, I think you've cured most of the slackers. Ah, yes. That had been the intended result, though he had been hoping for a few more personal consequences. Blue eyes twinkled at him, and Iroh tried not to grin too broadly. Well, perhaps he'd succeeded in both goals. Men, so transparent. Iroh raised gray brows, the picture of innocence. He'll be fine, Amaya said firmly, stepping closer. He's armed, he's prepared, he's not alone. And the last time he was here, my nephew was bitten by something with venom and too many teeth, and I did not find him for 2 days, Iroh said plainly. When I did find him, he had used fire to clean the bite and was still moving slowly. He sighed. He claimed to be fine then as well. This time he's not alone. Amaya took his arm. Come on, Captain Donghai wants to talk to you. I fear I already know what for, Iroh murmured, but he let her draw him to the makeshift docks, regardless. Getting those built had been some hours of adventure in itself. Fire Nation experience and temporary pontoon docks warring with Ba Sing Se's familiarity with shaped stone. In the end, Zuko had put his foot down. They'd build at least 3 docks, 1 in each style and 1 combination of both. No one, the young prince had pointed out, truly knew this harbor well. It might be the best dock design was as yet undetermined. Donghai's floating fire trap was moored at one of the Ba Sing Se docks. Iroh couldn't blame the man. Best work with what one he knew. He also couldn't blame the other shipmasters, who looked as if they wanted the craft anywhere else. Though any ship that impossibly fast couldn't be the near wreck that it looked. Donghai himself was on top of the weather-beaten deckhouse, watching with a wry smile as his crew unloaded some very familiar pottery jars. He glanced their way, mouth pressing into a grim line, waved to his first mate to carry on, then dropped to the deck and headed for the dock like the tramp of doom. Oh, dear. You. Donghai wasn't trying to tower over him, but the Earth Kingdom captain had a good foot over his height and a very determined glare. I never, ever want to see another freedom fighter again as long as I live. Iroh looked politely interested. Something went amiss with your passengers. Oh, you could say that. Which opened the floodgates on a wild and gallant tale of an innocent ship sent on a course straight through hell. Contrary winds, evilly plotting mini-warriors, hacked through locks, a poisoned galley, innocent men cozied up to by a charming demon in the form of a young rebel, and an onboard attempt at a revolt that had summoned up a watery half-platypus bear half-strangleweed demon that had almost sent them all into the briny deep before a mad rescue force of seagoing nuns had roped the mystic menaces with prayer beads and chanted demons and rebels both into submission. Iroh applauded. Well told. You didn't believe a word of it. Donghai accused. Well, the part about the nuns was true. Of that I have no doubt, Iroh said graciously. I have visited that abbey myself. They have the most delicious scents. He nodded toward the jars, which I am certain many of us would wish, but we may be short of funds. Actually, Donghai's voice dropped, and he glanced guiltily aside. Some of those are for your volcano. Excuse me? Iroh tried not to smirk too widely. I said it's for your... Look, The Abbess is crazy, okay? But she saved my neck, my ship, and my crew. I owe her one. She said it'd be worth our while. He glanced north, across the harbor to the ocean. Something about getting in on trade up north? I hear they've got pelts and ivory nobody's seen in about a century. Huh. Donghai shaded his eyes with his hand. Saw your little gauntlet coming in, and didn't that give us all gray hairs? You should have told us when they go out. A chill trickled down Iroh's spine. They are not supposed to go out. Swaying from foot to foot on stone-braced wood, Amaya suddenly looked ill. The harbor. There's something wrong in the water.
Get to shore, Iroh commanded. Now, Captain.
Donghai was already leaping ahead, up on his ship with a cutlass drawn.
Make ready to repel boarders!
If that water takes us under, Shirong realized, we're dead. That much Long Shui had briefed them on. An avatar might wander the spirit world at will. A human couldn't. And Yaoren were human, living bodies anchoring them to the living world. They might have the power to wade into the shallows, but crossing the waters would douse the flame of life within like a snuffed candle. Without a skilled healer to bring them back? I am not going to die here. Bending or not, the stance would help him stay standing, even as water, black sand surged and waves shattered like ice against it. What the? To his right, pale flames flickered, dancing on the dhow that slashed another wave away. Zuko's eyes were wide, and if Shirong hadn't seen him bend with splinters of stone stabbed in his chest, he'd have thought the young prince was about to faint. Sorry. Long Shui stepped back toward them, subtle shoves of his fingers pushing dark water into mist. You had to find that out for yourselves. This isn't the spirit world or the real world. You have to bend spirit as well as your element. If you're not desperate, it won't work. He kept his eyes on the waves. I didn't think he'd find us so fast. Silence across the sea. Ominous, brooding silence, punctuated by a waft of something that... spirits. Shirong had dealt with Plague Kamui before. This was worse. Long Shui rolled his eyes. Get serious. They're new. I've been here before. I know your stink.
Well, well.
A dark chuckle rolled out of the night. If it isn't little Hyoren. But there's no fire in you. Why is that? Get ready to duck, Long Shui said under his breath. Why do you care, you grain-eating mulberry caterpillar thief? We're not drowned, and we're not going to be.
Oh, brave words, little spirit slave. Why don't you say them where I can see you?
Long Shui's arms slammed into a block, mist crackling into opaque white. In the waters behind it, something sinuous cursed. Guess you forgot. This isn't the spirit oasis, Long Shui said coldly. You can't come over here, and there's no way we're going over there. A click of mandibles.
So rude. And the avatar was such a polite boy.
Long Shui tensed, teal eyes dark. Zuko touched his shoulder.
Don't let him get to you,
the firebender murmured. He takes what he knows and twists it, and makes you so mad you can't think. I know. Just focus on the mission.
Focus, Shirong thought, trying not to let his teeth chatter.
With the face stealer just across a little water.
Wonderful.
Yeah, Long Shui breathed. Thanks. He shook his head. Go, find the spirit. I'll keep him distracted.
But,
Zuko started.
Go!
Shirong traded a glance with Zuko, took in the firebender's determined look, and gave him a brief nod. Silent as mist, Zuko slipped into the shadows. Long Shui did a double take as Shirong nonchalantly stepped behind him.
"What the hell do you think you're doing?" he hissed.
"Our friend is sneakier than I could ever be," Shirong murmured back. "And the way our neighbor talked about fire, you might need it."
"You're both nuts," Long Shui snarled under his breath.
"Don't you want to know what he asked, Hyorin?" Chitin snickered in the dark. "I suppose not. It must be shameful to know how much you've failed, how ignorant your poor, hapless avatar is."
"Thanks for telling me. I guess I owe you a gift," Long Shui fired back. "And I know just the thing. I got it from my best friend, but I'll share it with you, just like the good neighbors we are."
99 bottles of wine on the wall, 99 bottles of wine. Take one down, pass it around, 98 bottles of wine on the wall.
Huddled behind ice, Shirong covered his ears against the howl.
"That's not what it looks like," Private Suke Kuni said numbly, eyes wide as his squad dropped their guard on stacks of naval supplies to head for the screams. "I mean, it can't be what it looks like. Stuff like this just happens in spirit tales."
"You have exactly 5 more seconds to panic," Rikia said wryly, gripping his shoulder. "Then we've got to do something."
He eyed the sergeant. "Boss, what do we do?"
"Moriaki, Shoni, get the civilians to higher ground," Sergeant Kyo ordered. "The further they get from the water, the weaker they should be. Fushi, with them. They're going to need you to fry anything that gets past us."
"Suzuran," Fushi protested, glancing toward their base ship with a jitter of panic,
"is a lot better off than we are. They've got tar. Move, people. Get some earthbenders and then..."
"Up the slope," Tingcha Wen ordered his children and anyone within hearing distance, one hand keeping his frightened youngest balanced on Asahi's back. "Away from the water." He didn't know if it would save them. Those things rising from the harbor weren't like any spirit he'd seen in Ba Sing Se. If they came from the sea, they likely drew their strength from it, and distance couldn't hurt. A shaft of sun filtered through the sudden mist, gleaming dully on rust-red armor as it lurched from the water. And another, and another. "Guan Yin, protect us." Standing at the railing above the anchor chain, Ji shook his head. "This can't be happening. It just can't." It was the gray that made his mind freeze like a South Pole iceberg. Ji was an officer. He'd seen enough combat to know what it did to frail human bodies. Shatter armor, gaping rents in flesh, even the inevitable ravages of sea life on eyes and lips and any other flesh sea and ice could liquefy. He knew the horrors of death. But dead was dead. Dead flesh didn't move. Freezing cold gripped the captain's ankle and yanked. G kicked out, fire, suddenly furious at the whole world. The drowned were legends. Spirits were legends. The Avatar was a legend. And legends had no place trying to kill his crew. Sodden flesh didn't flinch, even as the blast knocked it loose. But an engineer's wrench dented the damn thing, breaking fingers that clung to the chain. The corpse peeled free, tumbling back into the dark waters.
"Stay steady," G barked, swept a hand at shaken crew. "Weigh anchor, reverse engines. Get some water under us. Lieutenant!"
"Sir," Sato was white-faced but there.
"Remember my orders about you, tar, and anything else remotely flammable?"
G pointed down at the rising chain, where other sopping corpses were squirming to board them.
"Forget everything I've ever said."
"Yes, sir."
G turned his back as flames started, tar slurping down the chain to catch and burn. Right now, Lieutenant Sado's inadvertent pyrotechnics were the least of their problems.
Does anyone know what the hell we're facing?
The drowned. Mei Xiang held Jin Hai from the other side now. All Asahi's mane and feathers were bristled as the hen paced away from the harbor with a low, rattling hiss.
The unsanctified drowned, and there's so little here to burn them.
Burn sea-soaked corpses.
That's not going to be easy, Tingcha thought darkly. Does anything else stop them? What do they want? Us.
His wife was afraid. His beautiful, brave, determined Mei Xiang, who'd outlived Azulon's hunters and Ba Sing Se's disdain, was afraid. Someone will pay for that. Su Yan, go with your mother. Get everyone you can away from the harbor. Tingcha said firmly. Gia, I'm staying. Gia hiked up her robes, ready to run. Swallowed, but stayed.
I rather thought you might.
Tingcha looked to his oldest, as lurching bodies neared.
Mean, I've survived a black night before, but you are the one who's trained for spirits.
Walls, Mean blurted out, suiting action to word with a stomping stance that shot rugged sandstone spikes up to catch in armor and rotting flesh. Keep them back, by time. Gia took a deep breath and clapped her hands together. Sandstone swirled up, locking boots in place. Something slurped, tore, stained bones pulling free. Gia went white. Frozen. Ha! Tingcha punched, a wave of sand knocking the footless creature back. But there were more and more. Walls. He gripped his daughter's trembling hand, stood shoulder to shoulder with his grim, pale son. Indeed. Now. Arms swept out as one, and sand moved. Fire crackled over the bay as Suzudan fought off waves of corpses, arcs of bent flame, the head swimming scent of burning tar, the sudden boom as sparks touched natural gas over the water. The ship was wreathed in her own flames, a blazing target to draw eyes of the quick and the dead alike. Most eyes, Huojin thought grimly, forcing himself to breathe deep. Not all. Away from the water. Keep calm. Away from the water, he repeated firmly, hurrying fellow refugees inland with voice and looks and the occasional shove. Thanking these spirits for Luli, who'd picked up Dayu and dragged Lim in her wake towards the last place they'd seen Suzudan's marines. He'd never be able to keep calm if his girls weren't heading for safety. Please let them be there. I'm just a guard. I'm not trained to fight spirits, damn it. What a laugh. Spirits might be hurt by the sword at his side. Not easily, but he might stand a chance. What good was steel against the walking dead? The world is wrong. The world is all wrong. This way, young man. Corporal Moriaki. Huojin had never, ever been so glad to see red armor. The medic had a small girl clinging to his shoulder, but balanced as if she weighed no more than a feather. Shoni and Private Fushi darted past them both. Shoni grim, Fushi bouncing and wide-eyed with determination.
Come along quickly now, the medic urged. Our sergeant has a plan. This way.
This way was apparently down a narrowing funnel of earth-bent stone that eventually took a sharp twist to the right around a hastily raised hill. Huojin raced to catch up with Moriaki, trying to fit the walls and blasts of flame he heard behind them into some kind of coherent strategy.
This is a plan?
It is if the legends hold true, Moriaki called back. Are you familiar with tales of the drowned, Guard Huojin?
Are you kidding?
If he'd come face to face with a mirror, Huojin thought he would have smacked the crazy man first and asked questions later. Anyone that terrified wasn't going to listen to reason. Water just kills you. It doesn't... I've never... This is crazy!
Not madness, my boy. Malevolence incarnate, Moriaki said gravely. But our straits are not quite so desperate as you might imagine.
Dead men walking. Well, lurching. And it wasn't desperate? Are you insane?
I very much hope not. Moriaki waved his free hand, hurrying the fainter-hearted along. My father dealt with a drowned when I was a young lad. Dangerous, yes. If they catch us, they will kill us, and their curse will take our bodies as well. But they are not ghosts. Quite simply, Huojin, perilous as they may be to the unprepared, they are not intelligent.
Huojin glanced back at the closing slurps of wet flesh and shuddered. Smart enough to come after us?
Not us, young man. The flame of life.
Moriaki shivied slower runners up and around the twists like a koala sheepdog, eyes narrowed as if he were counting seconds in his head.
The force which moves them is utterly cold. It would drink the world's lives to be warm again. And so, our bait.
Huojin nearly tripped. We're the bait? Saving his breath, Moriaki didn't answer. And I thought it was just Lee who was crazy. What the heck? Ice was sliding uphill past them, gleaming white and blue. Another few frantic strides, and he could see General Iroh, Sergeant Kyo, and others guarding Amaya behind a stone wall as she drew frozen lumps from the harbor steps.
Ah, Moriaki grinned toothily. Excellent idea.
Excellent? The only thing even remotely related to excellent was getting away from the shambling bodies rounding the ice-laced curve.
Now, Iroh ordered.
Fists punched, and ice erupted in flames. I'm running out of time. Zuko paused on a piece of misty shore that looked just like every other blasted piece of shore. Except this one definitely didn't have Long Shui and Shirong on it. Or Ko, which was the only good thing about this mess. How do I find a spirit that doesn't want to be found?
You don't.
The dark ocean shimmered under the mist, his reflection shifting into something neither dragon nor woman.
Foolish child, how dare you trespass on my realm?
Your realm? Zuko dared. Thank you, great-grandmother. I must be getting close.
Impudent cub, Asagi Tatsu will never accept one tainted with Shidan's blood.
Azulon must have set your blood boiling, matching up father with mother, Zuko said wryly.
Azula, think Azula, get her mad.
What did you think? Because he was the second child, he wasn't important enough to worry about?
You dare.
And why shouldn't Azulon have approved the match? Asagi Tatsu and Byakko were allies once. Zuko scanned the fogs, looking for thin spots. He had to be close. She'd never be this furious if he wasn't. When did that change? When did you change it?
I will destroy you.
Maybe, Zuko acknowledged. But not here, not now. He stepped closer to the water, glaring down at the twisted reflection. You are ancient, great-grandmother, powerful, and you hunt those you think have wronged you to the ends of the earth. For that, you have grandfather's respect, and mine. But you are still our enemy, and still a dragon bound to the living world. He shrugged. So go ahead and threaten us. I hope it makes you feel better.
Water stilled. Dragon, yes. Bound to the living world, yes. I cannot touch you here without aid.
The ice seemed to clutch his heart as the reflection stretched up and out.
Aid I have.
The blue dragon coiled in the air, jaws gaping. Time to die.
I am so, so stupid.
Flames covered the world. Saluen was trembling in place, like a Komodo rhino scenting battle. We have to get down there.
No. Teruko took a deep breath, feigning calm with practiced skill. Usually it was easy, even when enemy ships were trying to ram them. Staring at the unearthly horde lurching from the surf after the civilians, not so easy. We have to stay right here.
People are dying. Your people.
The Kyoshi warrior cast her an accusing glance, made all the angrier by the face paint.
Don't you even care?
Yes. Saluen took a step back, on solid rock, fortunately. People are going to die down there, Teruko said grimly. But in case you forgot, our prince and your little brother and Agent Shirong, who's a decent guy for someone with rocks in his head, they're stuck here until and unless they pull off a miracle and talk a volcano into listening to us. If they can't, if something comes up here to stop them and they fail, this volcano is going to blow, and then everybody down to Ba Sing Se could die. So we're just going to stand here. Saluen's fists clenched. That's horrible.
Yeah, Teruko said quietly. Welcome to war.
She narrowed her eyes, peering at suspicious ripples in the brush, flexed her fingers in anticipation. And cheer up. It looks like the monsters are coming to us.
I wish Uncle had talked a lot more about dragon slaying.
A fleeting thought in the midst of duck and roll and twist the water now. Makoto's azure breath shattered chilled waves into salty steam, thickening the fog. Her wings beat down, a gale nearly blasting him from his feet as she circled for another fiery pass.
Agni, she's huge.
That was the only thing saving him. Her head alone was large enough to snap him up in one bite. Her claws, swords that would pierce him through. But her wings and body were sized to match, and not even the most skilled bender could ignore mass. A sparrowkeet can turn on a copper coin. She can't. Land and fight or strafe him to death. Those were her only options. Makoto blew out a subtler breath and gestured with both claws. Flame coiled in on itself and sprang.
Oh, that's just not fair!
Zuko slapped his hands together to part the flames, teeth sinking into his lip as blue fire fought like a live thing. This wasn't Azula's fire, unstoppable force meant to crush her opponents to ashes. This moved, breathed, hungered. It sought fuel, ever more fuel, and he was all there was to burn. The faintest whiff of sulfur. Will braced, Zuko rolled into the flame. Makoto's fangs slammed into sand inches away. The dragon spat out half-melted glass, whirled, not fast enough. Throbbing fingers grabbed the midnight blue mane, let the fling of her head yank him off the ground. Zuko crouched in midair, twisting with and against the whiplash force, slammed into blue scales and clung, face buried in her mane.
Fool, my flames will sear you wherever you lie.
No, Zuko gritted out, twitching as fire gnawed through clothes to skin. They won't. I knew Grandfather, I know Father, I know Azula, so I know you. He spat out blood, forced himself to think past the pain. You hate and you torture, and there's nothing else real in the world but what you want. He gasped at the searing heat, breathed in, and snarled. If I die right here, you won't get to watch. The roar of fury shook him, body and mind. Zuko clung tighter, focusing on how hard scales dented his cheek, how mane strands tried to cut his fingers, how the spikes of Makoto's neck pressed against his chest and gripping legs. Anything besides the fiery agony clinging to him in turn. Wind gusted and gravity yanked upwards, lurching his stomach. Wing over, she's diving.
The sea is still, Makoto sneered, wings clamped tight as she fell. It may be but an instant, but I will see you die.
A flutter of dark laughter.
A pity, and I had thought your sister his true heir.
Her grief tore through him, keening to the marrow of his bones. Her Sozin, her dark, murderous love, who knew how much she hated, who was willing to burn the world for her, starting with those lying beasts that had weakened her clan so much they had to die, who had been stolen from her too soon, far too soon, the Avatar curse claiming the soul that should have ravaged the world at her side millennia longer. True grief. True rage, enough to make any soul want to die. Azula always lies. Shut away feeling, shut away the fear of the ocean falling towards them. It could only kill him if he let it, so he wouldn't. The sea was Makoto's attack. Block it. Carefully not thinking, he let go. Beauty looks at mirror. Foaming waves surged, froze. Makoto's wings beat hard, trying to pull up. Dragon's chi spreads across river. Ice softened and rose, sliding under Zuko as he skidded down the wave face. Ice to slush, to water, to shore. Oh, this was going to hurt. He tumbled as Makoto crashed, ice splintering like a pack of glaciers grinding together. Seas roared. The dragon screeched. Silence. Utter, ear-ringing silence.
I think I won.
Makoto had come from the sea through his reflection. She'd returned to it through his mirror. The symmetry alone ought to bar her from the spirit world's boundary. For now. Ow, ow, ow! Still on fire! He yanked the shreds of the blue spirit's shirt off, remembering too well how this flame had fought him. Better to get it off first and crush it at leisure. Huddled in a nest of charred cloth, blue fire cringed. Zuko's breath caught. No, he had to be crazy. But on the fringes of the spirit worlds, who knew?
Are you alive?
Flame seemed to uncurl a little. Wavered at him.
You are.
Carefully, Zuko picked up the cloth. Damp sand might have quenched it where his own will would not.
What do I do with you?
Home? It was a whisper in his blood, hopeful but wincing like a frightened child.
Home, please?
Living flame, Zuko breathed. Heart beating fast. Fire under Makoto's control. Where's home? I'll take you, I promise, as far as I can.
Come.
Endless agony, his back and shoulders on fire, a thin trickle of his life feeding the fire cradled in his palm. Yet it only seemed to be a few steps before mist rolled back. A mountain of bright, a soggy blue scales, faint slumbering breath. Rippling the water about her. Pale Mizu Asagi green, sheathed the softer under jaw and throat. True Shinsu red, steamed in her damp mane.
It's her.
Across the water, in the spirit world.
Damn it!
Home! Flames crackled, pleading.
Home, home, home!
Zuko swallowed, looked at the shore, and the water, and the volcano spirit that couldn't be in any natural sleep.
I promised.
Think, how can I do this without killing myself? Zuko eyed the distance, checked what was left of his equipment. Knife, dao, pants, boots. If he just had his fire pot. Long Shui, you and I are going to talk about this place and how you show up equipped for it later. Crossing the water would mean crossing into the spirit world. He was fairly sure if he did that, he'd be dead. With no sort of helpful moon spirit around to drown him back to life, and no healing bender currently there in the living world. Long Shui and Shirong were busy. This was a bad plan. If he'd had a fire pot, he could have just tossed the flame over. Well, I don't, Zuko told himself fiercely, toes scuffing sand in frustration. So think about what I do have. Sand. Black, volcanic, glittering like the fiery stone it had once been. I don't have Toph to help, but I've got to try. Crouching down, Zuko scooped up a gritty lump and breathed fire into it. It doesn't have to be perfect, it just has to hold together for a few minutes. Ice would have been so much easier. But bending didn't work in the spirit world, meaning a bowl of ice would melt halfway across that pitiless sea. And then where would his flame be? Another breath, and he kneaded sand like wet sugar, trying not to think about how only will and bending kept molten glass from his skin. Knead it round enough to throw, big enough to hold some fuel. It drained him, like holding a fireball steady. By the time he'd shaped a bumpy sort of sandstone hollow, the world was tilting around him. Home? Just a little longer. Zuko tucked shirt remains and blue flame into the rocky hollow, swept into a low stance that ended palms out to deflect. Ice froze in a slim footpath from the sand, just above the water surface. The path grew farther into the mist. Farther. Clamped onto his chi like a lamprey, sucking, hungry, Zuko dropped out of stance, deliberately punching a fist into black sand. Ha! It was like tearing the suckerfish from his own flesh. It hurt, but the frightening drain stopped. Water is fire's opposite, Zuko croaked. One of Uncle's old lessons. But if you want to stop water, use earth. He coughed, getting his breath under control. Okay, stop before the ice ends. Spray wet ice, a storm slick metal deck. There wasn't much difference. Zuko walked the ice path with careful skill, not rushing, not lingering. Technically, the ice was still connected to the shore, so he wasn't crossing this water. But if a spirit shows up, I don't want to count on technicalities. Oh boy. End of the road. Dark water lapped at pale ice, turning it translucent and fragile. Far as I can go, Zuko said firmly. Back up a step to firmer ice, gripped the lumpy bowl and sighted on his target. Right there. A half spin and he threw. Crack, crack. Time to go. Either the fire would make it or it wouldn't. Scrambling back to shore, Zuko had to glance toward the plummeting bowl and its shrieking trail of azure flames. Fused sand arced down, struck dead on the nose. Shattered. There are some things even the darkest spirit magic can't hold someone comatose through. The tender snout twitched. Inhaled flame. Zuko didn't hear the roar so much as feel it. An overpressure that flattened the world, shattered ice. Oh, damn. He went down into the dark. Cold, so cold. He tried to hold his breath, but the air was slipping. I'm dying. What do they say? Third time's the charm? Uncle, grandfather, sorry. Pressure. Not the squeeze of hungry water. Something long and sharp like a fistful of swords. Coughing, freezing, and the odd sword cage that gripped him was warm? Massive gold eyes blinked at him. A tender nose snorted flickers of blue flame.
Cub?
Like Shidan, like Ryoko Hime. Images, not words. Shivering, Zuko reached back.
My people, wounded, sheltering Caldera. Danger to come. My people against the darkness that steals souls.
Too much water, too much cold. He couldn't... Darkness. And oddly, the flick of a warm tongue. Saluin slashed and kicked at the half-dozen bodies in front of her, fan shields smashing the closest away, stomping yet another severed hand underfoot before it could drag her down. Who'd have thought a proper sword training could backfire so spectacularly? Cut off somebody's hand, they usually weren't a problem anymore. But the drowned didn't bleed, didn't flinch, didn't stop, bits and pieces still wriggling toward her, and the unconscious benders beyond. There's too many of them. It's not outnumbered, Teruko panted, a lash of flame knocking wet corpses from the ledge to tumble and squelch down. It's a target-rich environment.
I'll give you a target-rich, you walking sparkler.
Clammy cold seized her calf, and Selwyn stumbled. No! She lashed out even as they dragged her down, a scarf cut that opened one from shoulder to hip. It flopped, putrescent mass oozing, but bore her down into waiting fingers. Cold flesh like wet ice sucked the life from her, just as so many of her sister warriors had had their lives sucked away years ago, withering into dying crones. Let me die. I should have died. But there weren't enough hands trying to tear her apart. Not enough. Long Shui! Fear and rage fought the drowning darkness. Teruko! Agni! Fire exploded, sizzling in waterlogged flesh. Earth shook. Terror clutched Saluin's gut, worse even than the shredding hands. Monsters were monsters, but Earth was stable, unmoving, eternal. Shaking like a bowl of seaweed gel, lurching bodies flung about like children's jacks. She felt the vibration in the stone under her, like struck crystal, like singing. The cone roared. Aching, Saluin twisted her head in the death chill grip, eyes wide as smoke and flame and other rose into the sky. A dragon. It's a dragon. Misty wings beat, a warm wind of summer and flame. Asagi Tatsu danced in midair, exulting in free flight. Swooped, rolled, turned, saw them, inhaled. Better fried than sucked dry. Do it, Saluin breathed. Fire swept down like a wave. Saluin flinched, waiting for agony. The weight on her crumbled away. The warrior blinked through ashes, staring as flames washed across her skin, red and green dancing in bright blue, all warm as sunlight, to living flesh. The drowned burned, white flames dissolving even armor into pale ash.
Breathe.
An order, spots still flickering in her vision, Saluin didn't even try to disobey. Fire slid down her throat, burned.
Mine.
Somehow she was still breathing, dizzy and tired and weirdly hot, like she'd baked herself in noon sun, but alive. Long Shui! Oh. Saluin gave him a pat-down check as he sat up, squinting against the wind as misty wings soared down into the settlement. Are you okay? What happened? And was it panic playing tricks on her? Or was that white streak of hair just a bit wider? We won, Long Shui said thickly. I think. He held his head in his hands. Spirits, I forgot how much that hurts. Note to self. Curled on himself, Shirong wasn't even trying to move.
Taunting massive face-stealing centipede spirits is not a good idea.
Work, though.
Long Shui pressed the heels of his hands against his forehead, wincing.
Gave Zuko enough time to... Oh, no.
Teruko had her ear to the prince's chest, face grim, tipped his head back and pressed her lips to his, and breathed out a gurgling cough, and Zuko turned on his side, gasping out water. Only training let Saluen keep her grip on her sword. The green robe had charred away from the firebender's back, leaving long streaks of weeping blisters.
What the hell happened to you?
Long Shui's reaction involved more colorful language. Saluen grinned sheepishly as she recognized her own drunken curses.
I told you to stay out of the water,
Long Shui finished. Still coughing, Zuko flicked him the finger. If you can move, sir, Teruko offered a hand. You need to see this.
Oh, hell, the refugees!
Saluen started to slip off the ledge. Long Shui caught her wrist.
I think someone's handling it.
White flames gouted and died across the caldera below, fanned by wings of smoke and summer wind. Asagi Tatsu circled her domain once more, red-maned head searching for any last trace of undead flesh. Soared upwards, satisfied, gliding back down to mantle her wings over the cone. Gold smoke eyes stared across the distance to them, hot as the sun.
You may try.
We may try, Iroh murmured, watching over Amaya and his battered nephew. Not the most warm of welcomes.
Laying the restless dead to peace in pillars of flame, that was warm enough for me.
Amaya moved water-gloved hands over Zuko's back, smoothing away redness into whole skin. We wanted a chance. Sometimes the spirits give us exactly what we ask for. Iroh nodded.
How are the burns?
He'll be sore. A few days, Amaya said practically. They're not what I'm worried about. She moved her hands a bit lower, feeling along Zuko's shoulder blades. He needs to rest, Iroh. If someone has to sit on him to make him, light duty, I think your Marines call it. No heavy lifting, no extensive bending. If it's possible, I want him sleeping in the sun whenever he can. Iroh frowned.
Surely the burns are not that bad.
I told you it's not the burns. This is the second time he's drowned. Amaya pressed her ear to skin, listening to sleeping breaths, lifted it again.
I'm worried about his lungs. You firebenders need your breath.
Troubling thought.
But he will be well.
If he rests. Letting water flow back into a bowl, Amaya sat from her slumbering patient.
I wonder how he convinced Asagi Tatsu.
I am certain he will tell us. Later. Iroh felt in his sleeve, unaccustomed to feeling shy.
Perhaps this is not the best time, but if the promise of today holds true, we will remain in danger for some time to come, so there will not be a better time.
He let carved wood fall into his palm, gold chain bundled against it. Feeling every delicate curve he'd seared into the ruby wood disc over the past week.
Lady Amaya, will you honor an old man with an honest answer?
I would always give you an honest answer, Iroh. She saw what he held and stopped, startled.
Oh, don't laugh, Iroh thought ruefully. I can live with any answer but laughter.
Slowly she smiled. Reaching into her medicine kit, she pulled out familiar red cord.
Did you know Saluen has very good taste in wine and a generous heart when it comes to trading for her little brother?
Dead bodies and mayhem be damned. It was a magnificent day.
Is that a yes, my lady?
Iroh dared. You old scoundrel. Blue eyes danced. Who else am I going to find willing to stand with me, no matter what goes wrong? Of course it's a yes. Grinning, Iroh embraced her. Ah, it had been too long. Somewhere in the middle of tender touches, there was a sneeze. Nibbling an ear, Iroh hesitated, glanced over Amaya's shoulder as she shook with silent laughter. Ah, one aggravated, pale gold glare. Nephew, we were just chasing butterflies. Zuko coughed, still grumpy as a winter-woken platypus bear. Counting robe threads, practicing breath control. Amaya chuckled. Is that what you call it? Ask Private Rikia when he's being polite. The glare faded into something just tired. Is everybody okay? If you're busy, everybody's probably okay. Everyone's been seen to, Amaya assured him. You're the worst still to heal. Of those who will heal at all, Iroh thought soberly. Our people have matters well in hand. Asagi Tatsu's fires are restored, and we have her permission to live here. Long Shui states that the Face Stealer has no more power to strike us now, and will not be able to gather more for some time. Though to seal out malign power more securely, we still need a name. Dragon's Wings, Zuko muttered, eyes sliding shut. She called me Cub, and that's what we are. Shelter for those who need it. He winced and shook his head slowly. Zuko? Amaya asked. Go ahead with what you're doing, Zuko mumbled. He swallowed. I'm tired. Then rest, nephew. Iroh pulled the sheet up around him and laid a hand on wild black hair. Every man needs his rest. Sighing quietly, he let Amaya guide him out. He's upset, the waterbender murmured. Not with us, Iroh said confidently. He only misses his mother and what he wished to have with his father, had my brother not been such a blind fool. He's upset, Amaya repeated, giving him a serious look. It's common when a widowed parent marries again. You've done your grieving for Natsu. Now he has to grieve her memory. She waved a stern finger. Take it seriously, my friend. It hurts children to let that go. He's a young warrior, and we shouldn't let him be selfish. But a little grief is his right. They'd see about that. Only a friend? Iroh teased. Find somewhere a little more private, and we'll see how friendly you can be. Amaya winked. Ah, as my lady wishes. Offering his arm, Iroh grinned. A magnificent day, indeed.